Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org and the studios of WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck, our series of live performances and interviews. I'm John Schaefer. Brad Barr is best known as the guitarist and singer from the Montreal-based indie folk band, the Barr Brothers. But Brad, along with his drumming brother Andrew, is originally from Rhode Island, and that is where Brad is joining us from today. And it is just Brad, because he's released a really unusual solo album called The Winter Mission. It's an album of solo guitar instrumentals featuring many different members of the guitar family. And if you're at all interested in numerology, you're going to want to hear Brad explain what's behind this album. But first, Brad Barr is going to play one of his pieces on one of his many guitars. This piece is called Ancient Calendars.
Thank you.
That is Brad Barr with a live performance of his piece called Ancient Calendars from the album called The Winter Mission. And it's, Brad, it's been a long time since the Barr brothers were last here in our New York studio. It's great to see you again and with this really interesting solo project.
Well, thank you for saying so, John. It's great to see you too. I always love seeing your face, even if it's on a screen.
Even in a little tile, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of both John Fahey and the English guitarist Anthony Phillips, who was the original guitarist from the band Genesis. And when I hear 12-string guitar in that kind of pastoral, folky mode, I think back to both of those guys. Were either of them, were they part of your playlist, you know, as a guitarist growing up?
You know, for better or for worse, no, they weren't. Of course, I've been aware of John Fahey since I was a teenager, but Anthony, that's new to me, so I'll go look him up right away.
Yeah.
No, the solo guitar format, I'm actually not that savvy, you know, with it in, as far as the players and the whole history of it. You know, there are some things that I almost have to keep at arm's length just because I know that it could be so influential that I steal from it, or, you know, I mean, it's good to know your history. It's good to know where this instrument is coming from and the path it's taken. But especially for this record, I really didn't listen to much solo music at all. But I have enormous respect for John Fahey, and I'm sure I will for Anthony Phillips too.
Well, it's funny because when you started playing, and I had the same reaction on the record, I thought for a second that he's got to be looping. There's got to be something, but it isn't. It's all at the whole record. There's no looping. There's no pre-records.
I should stop you there for a sec. There are two songs where I use loops, no overdubs.
Okay.
So it's all, the idea was it could all be performed by one person in a single performance. So I do use a loop pedal on one of the other songs you're going to play, and you'll be able to see it if you watch the video. You'll just see the top of my head as I'm bending over a bunch of knobs and stuff. But not on this song. There's no extra effects or loops or pre-recorded stuff. One other song I do a loop, but they're really just ambient. I really just do them for that.
So it's interesting to watch you play this piece surrounded by percussion. And you actually start... For people who haven't yet seen the video and are just listening to this, the instrument at the beginning, that was a waterphone, right?
Yes. Yay. Good idea. Yeah.
There is no mistake. Once you know what a waterphone looks like, there's no mistaking it.
True. You know? True. And they're popular on sci-fi movies from the 60s too.
Horror film soundtracks.
Yeah, yeah. Very creepy sound. But I am impressed that you could that you knew what that was.
So the title Ancient Calendars gets us into numerology pretty quickly. So give us the number of the beast of this record.
for the sort of themes of this record, I did turn to numerology, and specifically the number 216. As I was making the music, I wanted to have something that connected it, because I was, just a little backstory, I was commissioned to make some music for a theater company called All for One Theater, who do exclusively one-person shows. So they wanted a performer to make one-person music. And in the course of making it, it kept coming up that maybe I'd want to perform this music in a more theatrical sense with themes and a narrative approach. So rather than just the regular concerts that I've been used to giving. So I wanted to have something that kind of to center all the songs around a theme. And the number 216 has been a sort of a mysterious part of my shared mythology with friends. And I guess I just went deeper into it as I was making these songs, and deeper into some of the attributes. Ancient calendars, I named it that because the Mayan calendar is known to have followed a 2,160-year cycle. They were able to track the orbits of Jupiter around the sun, and a grand age for the Mayans was when Jupiter made 2,160 rotations around the sun.
Wow.
I can't even remember when the tax season comes up. These guys were planning ahead, you know, like a million years in the future. So I find that really impressive and just cool that this number, and, you know, there's so many other places, it just seems to have this alignment with the natural world that some people have been able to tap into and get closer to.
Once you had that theme, was it hard for you to kind of restrict yourself to instrumental music and to not start writing songs where, you know, the lyrics referred to the number?
Quite the opposite. Actually, it made it a lot easier to sink my teeth into a body of instrumental work because it had this sort of driving power behind it. It had something that I could center it around. And, you know, for me, I really feel like a guitarist first and a songwriter second. Playing the guitar, just kind of doing what I do on this record is first nature for me. So it felt really nice to not have the extra work of writing lyrics this time around.
Well, you know, so this number, 216, it crops up in so many ways, from the sublime to the prosaic. 216 is the area code of Cleveland.
Indeed.
Hence that track on the record about Cleveland.
Yeah.
For folks who are not baseball nerds, explain why this next piece is called Baseball.
Well, it's pretty simple, and I remember thinking, I laughed at the fact that this object that I've been holding since I was a kid, that it is sort of so ubiquitous and so part of our culture, has the hidden number inside of it. There's 216 stitches of red thread on every single baseball. It's just just like the number of feet from home plate to first base, it stays in baseball. There are these sort of immovable factors, and 216 stitches on every baseball. I actually just bought a baseball today, funnily enough, to play with my son. But that's just another one of those strange prosaic virtues of that number.
As with the recorded version of these songs, we're getting to hear you on various different types of guitar. So the 12-string for Ancient Calendars, and what looks like a pretty beat-up old 6-string for this one.
Yeah, yep. That is a late 30s or early 40s Oahu lap steel that I never learned how to play it properly on my lap the way that Blind Willie Johnson learned to play a Blind Lemon Jefferson, but
yeah.
I flip it up like a guitar, and it's crazy because the tones that come out of this thing, I put a pickup in it, but the tones that come out of it, the notes that just growl are, you know, for an instrument that's almost 100 years old, it's still got so much spit and vinegar. I ran this guy through a octave fuzz pedal and also put a mic on the body. So I try to get a balance between the acoustic sound of the instrument and this really kind of explosive harmonic overtones of this fuzz pedal. So yeah, I really love this track. Super fun. And every time I play it, it's a reinvention of it. Kind of my take on where the blues meets Indian, not necessarily Indian classical music, but some of the raga styles.
Sure.
You know, the pentatonic ragas.
The slow opening and then the more rhythmic second half.
Exactly. To try and tell a story, basically, just telling a story with just that instrument.
And the drone. The little Shruti box.
The little Shruti box, yep. We picked that up at the Ali Akbar Khan School of Music. We've had that thing for 20 years. It's, I guess I could say, aside from the loop I use in two songs, it would be my only other accompaniment on the record. And I wanted to do that song to make a point. When I actually recorded it, I really just turned it on in the room beside me and let the mic pick it up. So in the video I sent here, you can just see you just see me turn it on. But yeah. It really works, that thing. It really does the trick. Yeah.
All right. Let's hear this piece with the all-American title of Baseball, but with this kind of South Asian cast to it. It's a live performance on the lap steel guitar, played in the regular, being held in the regular guitar position by Brad Barr. It's a track from his new record called The Winter Mission. Thank you. That is Baseball, a work by Brad Barr from his solo record called The Winter Mission. Brad playing, as he told us, an almost century-old guitar that is meant to be played as a lap steel. And you do have, Brad, the slide on your finger. So
yes.
In addition to having the drone from the Schruti box and the kind of slow alap section leading into the more rhythmic, you know, the way an Indian raga unfolds, you also have the ability with the slide to get away from the frets so that you're not bound to the regular 12 notes of the classical guitar. Was that, how much of that was kind of intentional and how much of that sort of unfolded as the piece became what it is?
Well, I'm not going to pretend to be, you know, a student of traditional Hindustani music or the sargam. This is about as far as I got, was with the syllables and some of the rhythms, the tihais.
Right. For folks, sargam is the Hindustani version of do re mi fa sol la ti do.
Yeah.
Sarigama padanisa. Yeah.
Nice. I'm glad you said that because I didn't want to put myself on the spot. I guess I'm always looking for that connection between the, you know, what we in the West have come to have a certain association with the word blues, and
right.
What we most people identify as the blues is never quite satisfied. What I think is really wants a more, it encompasses more of a human experience from, you know, the music of the Japanese shamisen. There's a style called tsuguru, two shamisens playing together, and it sounds like Robert Johnson or Jimi Hendrix, and they as well as, you know, a lot of traditional Native American, Native North American chants to the music of India. I guess that there's a human experience that is the blues, and that's what I'm trying to get to. And for some reason, this guitar, the physical response from it really helps me get right into that. It's not an instrument I can be particularly virtuosic on. It requires me to almost be a bit of a, a bit ham-fisted, but it also calls upon a more emotional place for me.
Yeah. So in making this album, how did you make those choices, which piece would be played on which guitar, or did the guitar basically lead you to each piece?
More the latter. Like I said, I'd been commissioned by a theater company to make some music. Michael Walkwood contacted me. He knew my first instrumental record, The Fall Apartment.
Right.
He said he'd been waiting for another volume of this and was getting tired of waiting and just thought I'm just going to call the guy and hire him to make some music. And when it became clear that what he wanted was for me to free myself to do whatever I wanted to, it got very interesting for me. It became a much bigger challenge. And I did turn to the guitars and the instruments. There's a six-string ukulele with doubled strings makes it on there. A little Mexican requinto, right. Four-string Mexican requinto, the 12-string, a couple of electrics. I just took it as an opportunity to, you know, reconnect with all these instruments that I have and kind of let them guide the way.
Did you at any point add up the number of strings, the total number of strings that you played on this record?
Are you crazy? No, just the number of notes that I played. Just the number. Yeah, they do equal 216.
No, they don't.
No, but I should have put that in the press package. That would have been cool. Just to get people counting
right,
along.
Right. When did you first kind of encounter that number as something that had meaning to you?
Well, it was actually when I was about 15 years old. A gang of friends and I, actually the same crew that I referenced on our The Last Bar Brothers record, The Queens of the Breakers. I was lucky to have a good bunch of guy friends when I was 15 to kind of go through all those firsts with, you know, the first time you're your mind gets blown on some kind of a psychedelic thing, or the first, you know, our first kind of real girlfriends, or, you know, music, first bands, you know, first time writing songs and performing them with these guys. First real taste of independence. And it was with these guys, and it was actually on one of these sort of strange nights where we were, you know, staring at a grapefruit and having revelations about the universe, that someone pointed out that it was 2:16 in the morning, and my friend, whose house we were at, his dad was awake. Someone said, it's 2:16 and your dad's awake. Everybody put down the grapefruit, tennis balls or whatever, you know, look normal. And that was the first time. And we woke up the next day and we said, do you remember that? It was 2:16. That was 2:16. Then it just started tumbling into our lives in a way that sounds kind of silly now, but it was part of this mythology we shared. And then it just started coming up all over the place. And then I started realizing that other cultures reference this number. And since those first days of experiencing that number, it's just kept me engaged in this kind of unknown, mysterious side of the world. I haven't altered a 2:16. It's just a great mystery that I can keep coming back to and keep have people will write me about, you know, the Hebrew name of God. Did you know it has 216 characters? Prayer beads, Indian prayer beads, as one of the songs title, 108 prayer beads on a string. They usually count them forwards and backwards.
For 216,
yeah. 216, so yeah. But that was my first. Yeah.
It's also the number 6 cubed, so 6 times 6 times 6. So
it is.
And it is kind of the number of the beast.
I know. That I have not found any reference. There's no writing I've found that's explored that strange connection. But as you point out, it's 6 cubed. It's also the sum of 3 cubed plus 4 cubed plus 5 cubed. It's the first time that appears, the lowest number where that appears. A sequential, 3 sequential cubes equals the next sequential cube. I think the next time that happens is in the hundreds of millions.
Wow. Well, you're almost into like Fermat's last theorem there with that crazy stuff.
I'm worried that someone is going to start asking me real, you know, mathematical or numerological questions. So I try and take a very layman stance on this.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about it all.
Well, I was curious about where the title Your Dad's Awake came from, and I was going to like throw out some kind of lame dad joke about it being 2:16 in the morning, except it turns out that that's really how it
come happened. On you
well, so that is literally the story of
that's
this
exactly
piece.
The story, and any of my friends will testify to that is the first time that number arrived for us, and I don't know if it's ever gotten back to the dad. I don't know if he'll ever know just what he gave us that night. It just goes to show. It's just so funny that the guy just wakes up, has to pee, and now some idiot is writing a song and giving an interview about how is this moment significantly changed my life and inspired all this. It's, you never know what's going to inspire people.
So he was getting up to go to the bathroom, and you're having a mystical experience that changes the course of your life.
Yeah. That's the world in a nutshell for me.
Yep. Brad Barr is with us playing some songs from his album, The Winter Mission. Each track played on a different guitar or guitar-like instrument. You've gone electric on this one, although, you know, there you are in your brother Andrew's part of the studio with all the percussion. So we got a little gong action at the beginning.
Yeah, I love that gong. That's his newest piece down there, and that's the first time I've actually recorded myself using it, so
okay.
Felt pretty good. I think I did a good job too. I think I whacked it in the right place.
Let's hear Your Dad's Awake, live performance by Brad Barr.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is Brad Barr and a kind of epic version of Your Dad's Awake. It's about 5 or 6 minutes on the record, almost double that length here, Brad. So, you know, these are, I guess these are expandable, like accordion-shaped pieces. They can expand or contract as the needs require.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another sort of characteristic of this record that I forget to mention, is that there are 12 pieces on here. I'm going to say at least 9 or 10 of them are really just improvisations. This one being one of the more obvious improvisations. In this, the case of this song, recording it, I remember just playing for like an hour and a half, just going through all these different sounds and playing and recording it, and sitting down and looking at it all, and I just started chopping and putting things together and seeing what could fit. Finding sounds, finding kind of concepts, not necessarily melodies, really just finding approaches to the guitar and then trying to pull them together.
Well, I mean, the whole album is about different like approaches to the sounds that these instruments can make, but especially with Your Dad's Awake, where you've got all the effects pedals going, you know, especially by the end. I don't think you touched the strings of the guitar for the last minute there.
No, that one was my big, probably the most experimental piece on the record for sure. It's my green 1965 Guild Starfire, and I'm running it through a delay pedal in the beginning, a digital delay sped up so fast that it becomes a tone. Like a, you know, any delay, if you speed it up fast enough, it starts to take on a tonal thing. And then it's just, then the loops come in, and now I can kind of free my hands up. I really try to use the loops creatively. Try and use them like instruments, pretty much. That's the best way I could describe it.
Well, the album is called The Winter Mission. It is a solo record, coming more than 10 years after the first record, which was The Fall Apartment. So you've taken us from fall to winter here. I mean, was that intended as a kind of seasonal sort of connection to the first record?
It's a real long-term plan of releasing, four instrumental records before I'm 80. That's
15 years apart, right?
Exactly. I made the mistake of naming the first one this kind of pun, The Fall Apartment, and I always thought, well, I'll be able to come up with, equivalent sort of season with place to create a chuckle, but very ill-advised. Never use a pun as an album title, people. If I can impart one bit of advice, just resist the impulse.
And The Winter Mission, so was this commission to write these solo pieces, was that a winter mission? Did that happen in the winter?
I settled on that title. That title struck me because it was an intermission from our lives, and it spanned actually almost a whole year of making. So it wasn't any one particular season, but when it was finished, it felt like winter to me. And I don't know, the mission is just always that, I don't know, it felt like a refuge, an idea of refuge, sort of many layers to it, and none of them are that tremendously significant. Again, I was just trying to come up with a good pun, but...
But you just told us never to give your album title a pun.
I know. I did it. It's like Britney. I did it again.
Well, I am glad that you did, because I love this record. It's just full of... It's a whole kaleidoscope of sound, and the fact that it all comes from one family of instruments is kind of a testament to the instruments, but also to you as a creator of texture and sound. So,
well, I feel like it's an important attribute of music, the solo performer, without any overdubs. I love overdubs. I love building colossal, ridiculous things in the studio. I love playing with other musicians, but just as important to me is the exercise of doing it just on your own. I think it's an important experience for listeners, and important for we musicians to remember what that's like, and to draw it out of ourselves, to tell that story just on our own with no modern crazy technology.
Right. except for the occasional pedal.
Except for the occasional, 24 pedals, and yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, well, Brad Barr, the album is called The Winter Mission. Brad, it's been a while. Great to see you again, and thank you so much for playing for us.
Hey, John, it's great. Great. I love your questions. I love the way your mind works, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you anytime.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Take it easy.
Watch the videos of Brad's solo performances for us. They're on the New Sounds YouTube channel. And of course, right here on the website, newsounds.org. Our Soundcheck Sessions crew consists of technical director Irene Trudell, producer Karen Havlick, and video editor David McLean, and myself, John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time.